welcome all. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 143. No one's ever really gone. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to Facebook and check out our Facebook group there, The Portal. You can find us on Twitter at PortalGaming60. And The Portal Gaming Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, all those things. Everybody, I am your host, The Brant, bringing you episode number 143. It's been a little while, it's been a tricky fall, but we're not really gone. We're just on a little bit of a here and there. With me for this episode is...
your co-host, Kathy.
Woo! All right. Kathy, we are getting fit.
I know.
Yeah.
Exercising every day.
It's true. Although, now I've been told that it's like 5 or 6 days a week is better than 7 days a week. So, I'm taking today off.
Nice.
What have we been doing? Tell everybody what we've been doing.
Brant got me the Ring Fit for Christmas, which works with the Nintendo Switch. So one of the controllers gets strapped to your leg, and the other one gets put in a, I don't know what it's called, an exercise ring, a tension ring, something. And then it's like a first-person adventure game kind of thing where you exercise, fight monsters by exercising.
Yeah, it's like a JRPG. It's like old school RPG style where you physically run, and then there's a monster in your path, and you have to fight the monster by doing various aerobic stretches.
Just exercise.
All right. in order to defeat them, and I like it.
Yeah, I'm sore.
Yeah, I find it helpful, and I'm not usually one to be motivated by, like, get this achievement, or level up, or level up is kind of fun. You get more things, yeah. And you get more stretches, exercises, sorry.
That's fine.
In terms of all that, so, yeah, it's been kind of cool. So we've been having a good time with that, and we're a little bit sore. So I hope people have some New Year's things maybe they're doing. I'm not really a resolution person. This was really because we got this for Christmas.
Exactly.
It's kind of the same time of year, but... makes sense in terms of all that. It is not cold and snowy here like it was prior to Christmas, and PAX Unplugged was actually not too bad in Philly. It was a lot worse in Connecticut, even though they're only about 3 hours apart.
Yeah.
We had a lot more tundra-like weather, and now it's bright, it's sunny, it's not quite 50 degrees, but it's 40 degrees, and that might sound freezing cold to some people, but that's pretty warm for January.
Yeah, it's decent for us.
At night, it's been, you know, 30, 35, and it's typically about 15 or 18 degrees at night. So
yeah.
It's like double the temperature at night. I mean, I go out without a jacket on sometimes.
Oh, boy.
40 degrees. So that's been pretty good. What else? Anything new? Anything exciting? Anything different?
I don't think so.
All right.
Keeping going.
Yeah. Yeah, I just signed up for teaching at ConCon, which is our local, the Connecticut convention. I'm going to teach a bunch of games down there, catch up with a bunch of people. Probably most famously, Eric Sommer goes to that and talks about that a lot in the Dice Tower podcast. So it's a good local convention. If you're kind of in the Northeast area, it's a good one to check out. It's lots of playing of games and things like that. And then just looking forward to 2020. Do you have any hopes, dreams, goals for 2020? Oh, she made a face at me. Why would you ask me that question?
Yeah. I'm not a resolutions person.
Yeah, I know.
Or a...
it was more something to talk about.
Keep going.
I already know that's how it is. That doesn't mean we don't have hopes, dreams, and goals. I don't want to make that sound bad. We just don't sit down and write those all out and go from there. So.
I don't have a ready list for you. Sorry.
Cool. So let's talk about some games. And then afterward, just briefly, we're just going to kind of discuss gaming in 2019 kind of as a whole without doing any top lists, because we're going to save that when we do our top 10. Right now, we're just having a little scheduling issue to get Kathy and Brian and Larry and myself together and do our top 10 of 2019. So we're just trying to wait till we can get everybody and go through that. Although Kathy notoriously doesn't like to do top 10 lists, so last year she came on and commented about games that she enjoyed that we mentioned, or just mentioned some games she enjoyed playing in 2018. So maybe we'll do that same thing, or maybe we'll part you in. We'll see. So I can respect that. I mean, there's no reason to put games in order other than for the joy of it. And if it's not joyful, then it's not really necessary. So
exactly.
And it changes so much, right? In terms of all that. So we'll see how all that goes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, we're just going to go down the stacks of games we have here.
Yeah. All right,
so first up is...
Silver and Gold.
Silver and Gold is a flip and write game in which you are searching for buried treasure. And so you get a bunch of buried treasure maps. And then there are some polyomino cards. They have pictures of various polyominoes. And you're going to flip 7 of these 8 cards every round. And then you're going to cross out boxes on your cards, which are treasure maps, in order to complete things or check things off. There's gold coins on the treasure maps. There's X's that let you mark some other things. And there's palm trees, which will give you points based on what's in the center row. You're going to do that 4 times. Then you're going to total up your points. The goal is to complete a card. Once you've checked everything off, I guess it means you've searched the whole island.
Yeah.
then you get a new card, and based on the number of spaces, the cards are worth 8, 10, 12, and 14 points? Not sure if there's a 14. There is 14. So once you've completed all that, you will go through and add up your points and see who has the most. I guess I kind of glossed over it. The really interesting part is it comes with markers, and you write right on the cards, and then you just erase them right off. They're dry erase. And makes it really easy for portability and all those kind of things. So I generally don't like roll and write games, but I find this one really fun.
Well, it's not a roll and write because you don't roll.
I know. Well, it's in that category. It's always the argument. Should we have flip and write games and roll and write games and flip and roll games and roll and flip? Or should they just kind of all be in this same category? I don't know what it is. I don't know. I think it's just pure simplicity and joy. Now, there is one rule in the game that you're supposed to, like, pass who's first to break ties and things like that. And that slows the game down to me, to try to figure out who's first. And people have those people flip the cards.
Yep.
So that can work pretty well. I prefer to just be like, if two people score something at the same time, they just split the points.
It doesn't happen that often.
Right. It's very rare. I think I've had it happen, like, twice in all the games I've played of, like, you know, whatever, 5, 6, 7, 8 games, something like that. So it's just very fun. It's just relaxing. It's joyful. It feels like doing a puzzle book or something like that.
Yeah.
With just a timer where you're playing with other people. I'm not really worried about whether I win or lose. I just want to try to do some clever things. It's not super clever other than maybe trying to predict what the next card is and then being right. So what was your take on Silver and Gold?
It's simple and straightforward, and it was fun.
Yeah, we played it with Zephra, and she totally enjoyed it.
Yep.
She wanted to play. Played it with game groups. We played it at PAX Unplugged, right?
You guys did. I didn't play.
You didn't play? and it was enjoyable there. So it's totally one of those games that I would bring to a family-like thing, and I would bring to a gamer thing as a filler.
Yeah.
So that is Silver and Gold from Phil Walker Harding and Pandasaurus Games. I think Kathy and I both give it a thumbs up. All right, next is a game that, Kathy, you acquired for us at PAX Unplugged. What is this game?
This is called Charmed and Dangerous, the Princess Adventure game.
Cool. Tell us the theme of this game.
So these are fairy tale princess characters, not just princesses. There's Gretel in there. I'm trying to remember the 4. Oh, Dorothy. Snow White, and I'm trying to remember the 4th one from the base set off.
Briar Rose?
Oh, Briar Rose, that's right.
Which is Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah, which is Aurora.
Aurora.
She's got all the names.
Man.
yeah, so you, it's a deck, not deck builder.
Hand management. Cooperative game.
Yeah. And you're trying to defeat whichever villain. You can set it up in different ways. You can play with different princesses and defeat different villains. So there's the gameplay is a little different.
Yeah, so on your turn, you're going to draw two cards, and then you can, like, there's, like, a grid, a 3x3 grid, I think, in the center, and you can flip over one of those cards to explore, and then it'll be an enemy or a treasure or an event that happens. And then you can work as a team to try to defeat that. If you defeat it, it gets discarded, you get to draw another card. And then you generally, then you do whatever the villain says, which is add more cards to that center tableau. And you're trying to work your way through that deck till you can get the villainous to flip over and then fight her and defeat her by basically collecting four different powers, which are like red, orange, green, and blue.
Yep.
Which represent things that I can't remember what they are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cooperation. So we got a demo of this and we really enjoyed it. We really liked the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
It was really nice and got a chance to play. I played a couple times. I actually played it solo, two-handed. We played there. We played again.
Yep.
Have we played other than that?
No,
I can't remember.
Just the twice.
Okay. And whatnot. And so overall, I find it a pretty interesting puzzle, but it didn't quite seem to work at two. Like, we really enjoyed it at PAX, and then when we played it that second time, I can't remember. It was kind of simple.
Well, at PAX, I think that the two characters we played worked together really well. And when we played it at home, we played different characters, and their powers didn't work together as well. So it seemed like either you would want to play it with a higher player count so you have all the powers available, or just make sure you choose characters that work well together.
Or play two-handed.
Yeah, that's true.
I think could work pretty well.
I mean,
people, you know, mileage is going to vary on that.
For
people who want to do that. I don't mind playing two-handed, but some people, that'll drive them crazy. They'll feel like they're not their character.
Right.
In terms of that. Yeah, so it really strikes me that the higher player counts where this will be better. There'll be more cooperation. There'll be more turns. There'll be more talking. But it's a very casual game.
Yeah.
Like, it is not trying to be high-level thinking, high-level. It's definitely trying to play off the theme, the joy of going together. It's all female heroines, which is cool. In terms of that, kind of reminds me of One Deck Dungeon on that front. And it probably is really a little bit more of a family game than a strategy game. It's a lot of reading.
Yep.
And it's a lot of complex text, right? Like, this will trigger and that will happen, and then you'll have to do this, and this will attach here, and so doesn't necessarily flow well for a family game, but it kind of plays at that level of strategy where you can just kind of let some things happen and make some plans, and they may go awry or may not, and you kind of keep going through. But that's Charmed and Dangerous from Third World Studios. Nice. I'm just going to pause for 1 second to get power because we're about to lose power on our recorder.
Yeah.
Alrighty, we are powered up. Here we go. So, next up, we got a chance to play Crystal Palace. So, Crystal Palace is a game from Furlanspiel, who probably is most famous for Terra Mystica, Gaia Project, and then one of my favorites from last year, actually, Magnastorm, they made as well. So, Crystal Palace is designed by Karsten Lauber. And like I said, it's Furland, but Capstone Games brought it over to North America and did that distribution there. So, Crystal Palace is a dice worker placement game with a really tight economy. So you start with $40, and then you have dice that you can place out in various worker placement spots. And it's almost modular boards, but you don't really change their order. You just change them based on player count. So you have all these boards you lay out on the table. You're attempting to acquire the most points by inventing items and getting all these items ready for to show off inventions, excuse me, to show off. So you've got various inventors and inventions throughout the years that you're drafting and playing through. So probably the biggest catch or niche to this game is that you get all your dice at the beginning of a round and you place them on whatever numbers you want. And then you pay that many coins. So whatever the total is, you pay that much. Then the player who pays the most will get to go first. And then one at a time, you're going to place all your dice out and then resolve them all. And the worker placement spots have values, like thresholds. So you need to put a 4 or higher on this space. You need to put a 3 on this space, whatever it is. And then you'll work your way through those in terms of order of what players played. And you're going to acquire various items. So you're acquiring patents for your inventions, and you're acquiring their inventions, and you're hiring the inventors, and you're moving up on various tracks. And I'm trying to think of any of the other things in the game that I could think of. Can't remember that board over on the side, what that was called. So I apologize. It's been a little bit since I played this one. But so you're working around all these very Euro-esque mechanisms and working your way through. You're then trying to get like bonuses that you can put out on your board because there's all these negatives. You're trying to cover up those negatives towards the end of the game. And then you'll have like a little bit of an income round finish, and then you kind of reset and go through those rounds and play through a series of rounds, at which point, you know, you'll see who has the most victory points, and that will be the winner. There's also that board you're working up, you know, in terms of all of that, like your quality board or your
fame. Yeah. Or media?
Yeah, it's like a media. It's like your, it's like a megaphone advertising board or whatever it is. So, yeah, so I've heard really good things. I've heard people say it's one of their favorite games of the year. Played it twice, and the first time we played two-player, and you were not of great enjoyment of it. I had enjoyed it, but I went and played a second three-player game and didn't find it as enjoyable as the first game. It's really tight on the economy. I think that was a piece that was frustrating you.
Yeah, and it's also kind of chancy about whether you get cards that will end up working together or not. And it was tough because it seems like a game I would like. Everything about it seems like something I would like, and I wanted to like it, and it looks really cool, but I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just frustrating.
I'm kind of with you on that. Like, the economy, I like games that have a somewhat tight economy, but too tight. Like, there was no system to get money back. It just felt like anything you were getting was pennies on the dollar for what you were actually trying to work your way towards.
And then, at the end, you're adding up all your score, and then you just subtract, like, a ton.
Yeah, you're like, oh, I got 74 points. Minus 10, minus 5, minus 15.
Discouraging way to end a game. And you just slide.
But yeah, the final scoring element is to move backwards.
Yeah.
It's almost like if you move backwards first and then gained your points, it might just boost morale a little
something,
bit.
Something, I don't
right,
know.
Right, in terms of that. So, kind of interesting on that fun. So I'm trying to think of what it is specifically. Like, that economy piece was tough. The interaction was kind of interesting. There were some players who said that I played with that said they had chose sixes at some point. But I never really bothered to choose a six. It didn't seem relevant. You know, it was never like, boy, I really better choose a six and make sure I get that action. Like, there were multiple cards, so sometimes it felt like, well, if I don't get this card, I'll just take that one.
Yeah.
So there was always kind of an option, so it didn't have that press of
I'll
all of that.
See you later.
All right. You leave it?
Now you were on the podcast.
Do you want to talk about a game, Adon?
Well, we're having a podcast downstairs.
Oh, yeah? Why don't you come here and tell us about Crusoe Crew? We're going to have a little interruption here. We have with us our
co-host, Brian.
Awesome. And our co-host,
Edon.
Come over here near the microphone. Awesome. So did you play a game called Crusoe Crew with us?
Remember, it was the one with the books we had? We all had a book?
Yes.
You remember that game?
Yeah.
What did you have to do in the game?
You had to find treasure.
Yep. And did one person have a book?
No.
How many people had books?
Three or four.
Three or four people? Good. Nice. Yeah. And so we all had to flip the pages. And was the book like a book where you read a bunch of words, or was it different from that?
A little different than that.
Yeah, was it just words? What else was in the book?
Pictures.
Oh, there were pictures. Did you like the pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you like the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, you had fun with it? What was fun about the game?
How we found treasure.
Yeah, we had to search all through the pages to find treasure. Yeah. And did you have a special talent in the game?
What's a talent?
Did you have anything that you could do that no one else could do?
Yeah.
What could you do?
Go in tiny spaces.
Ooh, you could crawl through tiny spaces and swing across rings? Was that something else you could do? That's awesome.
You could... I could climb.
He's demonstrating climbing for us. Nice. So that was a pretty fun game.
Yeah.
Do you think you would play it again? Yeah, it was really good. Cool. Nice. Thanks for being on the Portal Gaming Podcast. Do you want to say bye?
Bye.
See you.
Yeah, we'll be on again.
All right. All right. So that's Crusoe Crew.
Yeah.
Which is Van Ryder Games. And we got a chance to play that. It was a pretty fun family game. We found some of the puzzles were just strangely confusing for kids, and then some things were very straightforward. But there's really good replayability that I didn't expect in that game.
Totally.
So that was fun. So Adon was talking about that for us. Adon is Brian's son. I think we somewhat made that clear, but maybe not. So Zephyr's been on the podcast at that age. So, all right, just doubling back. Sorry for the little interruption there. So Crystal Palace from Capstone Games. It's a good, heavy game. It's got a lot of think. It just didn't click for me. It's hard to put my finger on why, and that's a little frustrating to me.
Right.
I see what people want. They want that really difficult choice, and they want a little bit of that frustration. And Kathy, you're very interesting because a game like this, you'll be frustrated with. And I won't know, is that good or bad? Because sometimes frustration is good for you. You enjoy the frustration. And other times, the frustration, you walk away like two-thirds of the way, you're like, I'm just done with this game. Let's just finish it. And this was in that category. But a game we're going to talk about in a little bit, the frustration you really enjoy.
Right. And I feel like it's different when I feel like the game is against me.
Okay.
Is different from, oh, I know there's something I can do and I just haven't figured it out yet. Like, I haven't reached what I need to figure out.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost like it can be frustrating trying to make a choice. And frustrating might be the wrong word. It's just, it's hard to make a choice versus something being limiting. And Crystal Palace is limiting.
Yes.
Right? And so limiting is frustrating.
It's like, well, I don't have a lot of I don't know. I can't do the one thing that would be the best for me.
Right.
And so I have to settle for one of these mediocre options. I don't ever want that.
Yeah, the inventors and the patents come out three at a time. Mm-hmm. Or I think it's more with more players, but some numbers. So you don't necessarily see them all.
And they
in a lower player count.
They work together, but there's no order of how they come out that they would. You could get something and never get what it goes with it.
Right.
Or there could be tons of cards that go with it.
Right.
I feel like that part was part of my frustration in the first game, too.
Yeah. And there are a lot of ways to mitigate. Like, oh, I need a gear. I could drop down on this track. Oh, I need this. I can go here and trade for them. So I could see playing further and finding some of those things. But from our perspective of playing so many games, whatever number of times before we review them, I would say 1 to 3, typically, unless they're shorter.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to come back to a game like this and decide
that
I wanted to play it 3 or 5 more times and figure out what I want. Especially given that there are other games that I'm enjoying that are of this same variety that I'd rather play. Right.
Totally.
All right, so that is Crystal Palace. Next up, we got a copy of Ascension Skulls and Sails from Ultra Pro. And so we played Ascension literally to death.
Way back in the day.
Because the cards are like shredded. We didn't sleeve any cards. And I remember, so this was back, you used to, like the first couple years we were married, you used to, for my birthday, put together, or I guess I would put together a list of games that I wanted.
Yeah.
And then you would have like family members and friends contribute if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And purchase those games, which now just seems so funny to try to construct a list of games to purchase.
Right.
It's basically, you know, cosmetic pieces or expansions or something like that that you might consider for birthday or nothing. And I kind of was like, do I want Ascension? Do I not? And I finally threw it on the list. Let's try this game. Of course, we've been playing Dominion a ton.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, maybe we don't need to play Ascension like we have Dominion. But I was like, I'll throw it on there. Maybe it'll be fun. And that year, you managed to acquire enough money and then some.
And I think also Brian might have helped you out with purchasing through the store to get a better deal, whatever it was. And so you got Ascension.
Yep.
And it was by far the number one game we played of that pile of games. I couldn't even tell you most of the other games in that pile, but this one was huge. And like I said, it got played and played until the car's just worn out and we had to just throw it away.
Yeah.
It was gone. And then I think I definitely played the expansion, and I think I definitely played the second core box. And maybe a third core box. I know I had seen various ones. At the time, like a few years later, when the portal first opened, the Magic players there were playing Ascension, like on the side, along with Magic. So I saw it being played. So I may have played like maybe the first two or three. This is the 10th core box.
Oh, wow.
Or base set. So the game has been going that strong for that long. So we walked by the booth and I was like, you know, we should play Ascension again. And I love the idea of a pirate-themed one.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten a couple plays of this in. You've gotten one play.
I played once, yeah.
This is Ascension, Skulls, and Sails. So Ascension is a deck builder. Probably the things to think about are it has a center row. As you purchase cards, they get replaced. There's a dual economy, so there's strength and there's runes. Runes like purchase cards, and strength defeats monsters. And then as you defeat things, you get those classic crystal tokens, those plastic tokens, and it's a pool of 30x, where x is the number of players, so 60 in a two-player game, and you're trying to drain that pool, and that's when the game is over, and then you total up the points by going through your deck where the cards have points, and go from there. Skulls and Sails changes a few things. So first, there's a board that you can move around. So you have a boat, and you move around the board, and you can acquire cards. Now, what's a little tricky is each card has a space in front of it, but you can acquire any card. The space where you are, there's two bonuses. First off, if the cards have an anchor effect, that will trigger if you're in the space in front of the cards. You can get a further bonus. And then secondly, there's a crew mechanism where you have a little dial on your ship and you can tick that up and you can spend your crew to purchase cards or defeat cards. It's like a wild, but you have to use it independently of the cards in your hand. Other than that, it's a draw five, play your cards, play them in order, gain things. Oh, there's also a raid mechanism where you have like treasure tokens in front of you and you can steal them from the other players.
Yes.
So, first off, I forgot that Ascension is really fun. It's just a really fun, light deck building game. It's very light in terms of that. This game, I was surprised. I thought moving around the board was going to be just not fun. It was going to be frustrating to try to get to those spaces. But the idea that you could purchase any card, you just purchase any card, and then you try to take advantage of what's in front of you.
Yeah.
And you don't worry about making that the thing. Like, oh no, if I can't get the card by being in front of it, it won't be valuable to me.
Yeah.
So I thought that moving around the board was actually quite fun. It was worth doing. The raid mechanism is a little too take that, specifically in the two-player games that I've played. It's very one-sided. If I raid you till you have nothing, and there's so many cards that say, if you have three or more treasures, trigger this extra ability. And in a two-player game especially, one player tends to have three or more and the other player doesn't, and it makes those cards pretty powerful.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm totally going to add this to like the quick rotation of filler games we play on game nights. And I'd bring this to the store and play this with people. It's quite fun. I mean, I like Heart of Crown better, but the teach on this is nothing.
Yeah.
It's like 2 minutes.
Right.
And you're up and running. What'd you think?
I liked it. Yeah, the raiding thing was annoying.
Yeah.
But that was mostly because I hadn't played it and I didn't realize how big that was gonna be in the game, so in the beginning I didn't get any of the raiding cards, and then by the end it just never worked out. But I would totally play it again.
The points on the card, so like the gold coins are worth 1 point at the end, and the other treasure is worth like one for every one you have.
Mm-hmm.
They're relatively negligible. If I steal 1 point from you, that's a 2 point swing. It's not a big deal. So that end of it, it's those cards that trigger. But the idea of raiding the treasure cards in front of somebody is pretty smart, because it's way better than stealing cards or destroying cards from their deck.
Right.
Because nothing can be more frustrating a deck builder than just adding stuff or stealing stuff or being forced to discard stuff, because then you feel like whatever system you built is getting shut down.
Right, yeah.
And that can be really frustrating, because basically without an engine, a deck builder is nothing. then it's just a series of cards being played telling you what to do, but when you get to build your own engine. So it's really clever that they have you steal those from in front of you.
Right.
But yeah, it's just those cards. I don't even know. I'd have to look through the deck of 80 cards. There's probably like 10 that say if you have three or more treasures, but it seemed like just the right amount.
I had a bunch of them.
Yeah, and they don't trigger. It could be a little tricky, but it's so fast. Like, I think when we played, I might have won by like 20 or 30 points, but there's no reason we could have just shuffled and played again.
Right.
Like, it really wouldn't have been a big deal, and you could have beat me by 30 points. In terms of all that. Deck builders have always been the classic example to me of just saying, like, this is just fun that I'm playing it. The winning is icing on the cake, but building the deck is fun. So, if you haven't played Ascension in a while, I highly suggest going back and trying one of these sets again. It's pretty good. There are deck builders I definitely like more than it. And I'm really liking the trend of deck builders with boards, like Tyrants of the Underdark and Clank and stuff like that. But, hey, you can't beat a 2-minute teach and a 30-minute play.
Yep.
It's pretty awesome for that. All right. And then comes the biggie. So Maracaibo is from Alexander Pfister, who I'd probably say is my favorite designer. So Alexander Pfister has made Oh My Goods, coming out with Expedition to Newdale this year, Blackout Hong Kong, Mombasa, Great Western Trail, Port Royal, that awesome card game. Isle of Sky won the Kenner Spiel 1 year. Have you played Isle of Sky?
Yeah. I think so.
And various other games in terms of all that. And so Maracaibo came out, so there was no doubt I wanted to get a chance to play it. Came out right around Christmas into the store. Oh, we picked up a copy. Brian picked up a copy at PAX Unplugged, and then came into the store quite recently, right around Christmas, and I don't remember when I got my first plays in, but I've now played it 5 times in 10 days. So needless to say, I like the game. We'll just start there.
Yeah.
I really like the game. It's one of my favorites from the year. I wasn't sure. So what's happening in Maracaibo? So it's a big rondelle, which makes people think Great Western Trail, but stop thinking Great Western Trail. It's really a card game. So you're going to get a whole bunch of cards, and you're going to try to play these cards out. So essentially on your turn, you can move around this rondelle, which is the Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
Just the Caribbean. And you're moving around from Havana all the way circling back around to end around Havana again. And you play over 4 rounds. A round will end when one player gets to that last spot. There's like 21 spots or something like that. And the round will be over, and then everybody will get one more turn. And then there's a whole reset, score, gain income phase, and you go again. So the absolute joy in the game is that on your turn, you pick to move 1 to 7 spaces forward. So you have lots of options. And then you trigger abilities from that space. So essentially, there's cities and villages. You land in a city, you can give up a market good. So your cards are multi-use. They have a good, they have a resource, and they have an effect. You could like put them into play. They're like a person you can hire. And so you can give up that good, and then you can remove an upgrade token from your board. And every 2 will upgrade your ship. And that's a great part of the game, upgrading that ship, because there's 12 spaces you can upgrade. So there's all sorts of actions, bonuses, change the basic rules of the game. Your hand size goes from 4 to 6, all sorts of things. So you could do that. If you go to a village, then based on how far you moved, you get 1, 2, or 3 actions. So the further you move, I guess your sails are up, so you're moving faster, you get more actions to do things. And this is where you're purchasing cards to put in your tableau. So there's like a hand management of what am I doing in my hand, and then the tableau where I'm playing all these cards has a very strong, like, Terraforming Mars feel, where you're putting all these cards out in your tableau to gain all these benefits. You're gaining economy. You're gaining economy of victory points for the end of the game. You're gaining abilities. You're putting out these cubes for influence in the various colonial powers, right? France, Spain, and England, and all sorts of things like that. There's other actions, like you can complete quests by bringing the right items there. You can interact with, like, villagers that aren't, you don't necessarily like, hire them, but you, like, kind of place them and befriend them. And when you come back around to that island, you get to do special things. I know the theme has been called out a little bit. I think the problem with the theme, and I'm kind of trying to say neutral, is that that period of time, there was a lot of negative things happening. I don't think the game pulls out any of that negativity. The theme goes away for me pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I know I'm moving around these areas, and I'm looking for, and I'm like, oh, right, Port Royal's there. I know where that is. Or I know Havana is, you know, Cuba, whatever. But other than that, I'm not sitting there being like, this is so thematic. It's all those mechanisms. But man, the strategy and the card play, we were talking about, this is the game we were alluding to before. The decision of choice and timing and when do I play this and how do I get enough money and am I going to favor money over completing the round? Do I want to be first on this? Do I need to go there? Do I need to upgrade? What am I trying to do? What it does nicely is it gives you a hand of 8 cards to start that you then go down to 5, and it gives you 2, like, career cards that give you career goals. And that spells out what you want to do. It gives you a path, which yeah. I know is something you and Brian really focus on. Like, give me a path and something to do this game or a choice of what I can do.
Yep.
So that's me. Maracaibo is one of my favorite games of the year. It will be on my top 10 list. Super spoiler. Alexander Pfister just strikes again. The guy's amazing. It's awesome. What's your feeling on Maracaibo?
I really liked it. It was interesting. We were discussing after our last play. I always have trouble with multi-use cards because I like to plan ahead. But then when I end up spending cards, I have trouble, like, adjusting my decisions as I draw new cards of what to spend versus saving up to play this card. So I feel like I really like it, though. I feel like it's a puzzle I'm still working on and trying to figure out how to make work. But I enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about the story mode. Now, I know some people have kind of picked on the story mode. Like, why is there a story mode in a, like, somewhat themeless Euro? It's so seamless. I don't know why you wouldn't play with it, though. I mean, I guess when I teach people, I won't necessarily throw the story mode in there. But every other time, I don't think I would care if I came in on story 7 and people were like, oh, so there was this and this happened and now
it's
over here.
It's super basic.
It's like so basic.
And the story barely moves.
And it just gives you something to do, like, oh, if you all go here and upgrade, then this tile will get flipped.
Right.
And there's something else. It just changes the way you play each time. It just gives you one more thing to factor in. Like, oh, maybe I want to stop there and do that. Or maybe I don't. I don't even have to. So I would have loved the game without the story mode. It doesn't need it.
But it
certainly doesn't get in the way.
Right.
It doesn't feel extra. It doesn't feel like, oh gosh, I'm just going to throw these cards and tiles away. I'm just going to play through it. And it's a slight choose-your-own-adventure, so what we chose this time, we could choose different
next time.
You don't even have to play through the whole story. It doesn't matter. You're not sitting there going, I better get to the end of this story. I've got to play this game 12 times. You just don't.
Right.
You just don't. You can just throw it in and play it. We've been playing it every time we've played, and it's fine. And I could not play it if people didn't want to, but I just don't see why not. It just gives you more things to do, and it's so simple. Lay this tile over space 12. You can now do this action and complete this quest here. Done.
Well, it adds to the replayability of the game, because it just changes it a little bit every time. Yeah. So it's not the exact same board.
Yeah, and you're not looking up rules like, how does this work again? It's pretty straightforward. You might have to reread it because you just didn't comprehend it the first time.
Yeah.
Or you weren't listening if somebody else read it. That was not a comment on anybody. Looked like I was saying that to you, but there's that. So, Maracaibo, awesome. If you like heavy games, if you like engine builders, if you like card strategy, multi-card, I mean, very much that Terraforming Mars vibe is where I would go with it. With this rondelle that helps you just pick your actions, which is really interesting because it's kind of, like I said, there's these 21 spaces that are essentially 2 spaces, but they're not. And its greatest form of interaction is the classic Euro interaction, which is timing.
Yeah.
Who's going to do what and what? Oh, you ended the round. That changes my Oh, you went there before me. That changes my decision.
Yeah. Yep.
All those kind of things are, ooh, you got that before I got that. You drafted that card, whatever.
But it's open enough that, like, it's not like, oh, you got the one space everybody wants. Yeah. It's not like that, so that's...
Yeah, you definitely want a strategy, and probably, like, a main strategy, and probably a side strategy, and you can pivot.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate when you can pivot in a game. You definitely can't hear. I was thinking we were done. We have two more games.
Oh.
So let's go to Letter Jam.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about Letter Jam when we went to PAX Unplugged, but we played it a bunch. I don't know if we've given it an official review. I can't explain Letter Jam. It's so much easier to teach, to play.
It's confusing when you just hear about it.
But essentially, we would have a team. It's a cooperative letter game. I would make Kathy, if we're just playing two-player, I would make Kathy a five-letter word, like black, and she would make me a five-letter word like...
Soups.
Soups. Yes. And... It's a great word. Kathy loves when I ask her to do things on the spot. All right, so we would then exchange words. Now, you normally play with 3, 4, 5 people, something like that. But if you don't, you'd have some dummy players where you just have cards set up. So then I'm going to shuffle the cards I was given, and I'm going to put one card up so that everyone can see it except me. And for all the dummy players, you'll have extra cards out. And then what you do is anybody can create a word. I'm going to create a word using the letters that are available. But what I'm trying to do is create a word such that Kathy can figure out the letter she can't see. So I want to spell words like latch and put an H as the blank so that she would be thinking, boy, it's got to be latch because H is the only letter that would go there. That would make sense. And so she could narrow things down. So it's really a deduction game more than anything else. It's kind of like... I mean, it's not cooperative clue, but it's along those lines. And everybody's trying to figure out their own words. There's more rules in terms of, like, everybody has to make a guess to make sure everybody gets a turn. And you get more guesses when you complete things. And there's a wild space in the center that you can use. So if you're missing a letter, you can use that, which is tricky for when there's all consonants or all vowels and things like that. And, yeah, We've really enjoyed Letter Jam. It's gotten played at, like, every event we've gone to, everything we've done. I mean, there's an element, it's more engaging for everybody than, like, a Codenames. Because, it's CGE. It's the same company as Codenames. And Codenames is really, really good. But Codenames works better when everybody just knows what's going on and you have people coming and going. It works really well. It's a little slower to get started. And this doesn't feel as slow to get started. You just start making words. Oh, I can make a word. And then you're almost trying to, like, strategize as a group. Well, I think their word would be better than your word. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. But
I like it.
We've enjoyed Letter Jam. If you were to hypothetically make a hypothetical top 10 list, do you think Letter Jam might appear in that list?
Like from the year?
Sure. Yes, not overall.
Maybe.
It seemed like a game probably. You really, really like, so I was trying to just get you
I
to
do
say
really like
I
it.
I really, really like it.
Sure.
Would you see yourself traveling around with the game to other groups to teach them? You don't go to other groups, but people's houses.
Sure, I would teach it.
Yeah, your family.
Yeah.
They'd be down for it. Sure. So. That's Letter Jam from CG. And then last, I think I talked about this a little bit, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it. We played Blood on the Clock Tower.
Yes.
And it was taught to us by one Harrison Guzman.
It's true.
Who's been on the podcast. And so we got a chance to play Blood on the Clock Tower. So Blood on the Clock Tower is a social deduction game. It kind of ups the ante on Werewolf. It gives basically everybody has a special ability.
I like that.
Which is nice. You're not just villagers. And then you're trying to figure out certain things, but they can change. What else is different? When you die as a ghost, you become a ghost and you still have a single vote you can use throughout the game, which I didn't realize till the end of our game how powerful that could be if all the ghosts save their votes.
Right.
They could actually overcome the final vote.
And you can still take part in the discussion.
And you can still discuss, so you're not out. So those are the things that it changes. Soul Seduction is not my style of game, but it's definitely not my style of game. I enjoy playing them. I don't have issue with playing them. Or I know people who are just standoffish and they played one and they just can't do it. You and I lie super well, including to each other. Sorry, not regularly. We are capable of it. So it's always interesting because people, I think when we were playing that, people were like wondering about like the couple effect, which is completely nil with us.
Yeah.
I can't read much of you at all. Can you read more of me?
No, I don't think so.
No, so we're very good. I think it's our acting.
Probably.
It's very simple, like, for us to just, I don't know.
Right.
Or I can just pass off whichever. So that's interesting. With other people I don't know, because I don't know how well they know me to perceive that. So that group didn't have a lot of people we knew, a handful.
Yeah, that was, it was interesting playing, about half of the group had played it before.
Prior, and they had a dynamic.
And then the rest of us hadn't played it. And then there were, like, groups of 3 to 5 in our group who knew each other,
right,
but didn't know anybody else. Like,
yeah.
And we knew each other and, like, one or two other people, kind of. So it was an interesting
It very much struck me as, like, ooh, I want to play this at conventions. I want to find groups of 10, 11, 12 people with a moderator and sit down and play this for 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily going to purchase it to run it at my own house.
Right.
All those kind of things. It just, I think would lose some of that luster, but where it's already there, they've got items, they've
right,
got people who are good at running it. I want to jump in and play this. I'm not really super interested in running it. Moderating
it
games
seems like a big deal to run it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot to track. In terms of all that. But it does a good job keeping everybody engaged.
Mm-hmm.
It generally moves. There's lots of discussion. Almost every round we had to be cut off from our discussion.
Right.
And most people got a say because even once somebody's... It would go around, right?
Yep.
There was a point where it would kind of go around and everybody got a chance to say things.
Yep.
Which was interesting. So, and put your vote in. It does a good job making sure you get to participate. So
yeah.
Yeah, it was a fun, fun
I
game.
Liked it.
Cool, there's a whole pile of games that we reviewed, as we do, our favorite thing to do, in terms of that. So, quickly, let's just talk about 2019. So, 2019, from a board game perspective.
No, I get it.
So, we saw games all the way throughout. I'm just kind of going backwards for you to help you think of some, like Fleet the Dice Game.
Yep.
Wingspan.
Yep.
We did an episode early in the year where we were kind of talking about those two. And what we really enjoyed, which one we liked better, how we felt about those. Then, like, Magnus Storm came out. I really enjoyed that one. I'm trying to think of some of the other games as we went through that we were playing. And throughout, and then obviously finish out the year with games like Maracaibo and some of these other ones. Paladins of the West Kingdom we played, I think, on our anniversary.
Oh.
So a good time with that. I picked you up a copy of Tobago this year.
Yep.
So that was fun. Events-wise, I did ConCon, did Dice Tower Con by myself, which was interesting. I still like Dice Tower Con. Dice Tower East is what it is now. Probably my favorite convention, but I discovered that going on my own isn't my favorite. Now, I still had lots of people and knew lots of people. It wasn't tragic.
Right.
But having another person, I think, at a convention is really nice. And that makes sense for me because I'm a people person.
It does make sense for you.
Then did Gen Con, and did Vonner Con,
mm-hmm,
and finished with PAX Unplugged. So that was good in terms of all that. And then the store, we did two 24-hour marathons this year, one in June and one in November.
Yep.
So there's been a lot on tap.
Yeah.
For this year. So just thinking back to gaming and things this year, is there a trend or something you see or specific enjoyment that you found? Did you find yourself playing a lot of one-off games, wanting to repeat games, teach games?
I really like being able to track games in the Board Game Geek app. What is it?
BG Stats.
That's the one. And I was fascinated to see... I think I played... like just under 200 games, or at least I logged that many. And I think 117 or something were new.
Really?
Were new games.
You played 117 new games.
I'm pretty sure that something like that.
Wow, you must be a podcaster.
So I am married to a board game reviewer, apparently. I don't, it's just very interesting.
Yeah.
So I don't remember a lot of games because I meet them and then they go away. I don't know. It's just an interesting.
And I don't think that's your typical. I think that you thing. Would be happy to have a handful of, say, 10 to 20 games and just repeat them.
Probably.
Other than escape room games.
I love escape
room games. So I'm guessing in there you've probably got 10 to 15 escape room
probably.
Games.
Probably.
Which makes sense because of their, like, consumable nature.
Yeah.
That they're not going to be replayable.
Right.
But I think that's a big big thing for you. So, yeah, that is interesting. I mean, you definitely are gracious in playing new games or saying, like, okay, today I'll play this new game and this new game. Right, we find these days. But, man, you still look back. Like, we still logged a good number of Gloomhaven plays this year.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Like, we did that. I saw you teach way more games than you've ever taught in a year. You were teaching a lot. I saw you teach Fleet Dice to people at VonnerCon and just, you know, heavier strategy games, whereas normally you would just play them.
Right.
Even playing with some people. PAX Unplugged, you did some minis painting.
I did. That was fun.
this year and things like that. We got a dog. She's sitting in my lap.
That's true.
We got a dog this year in
Doesn't
May.
Doesn't really have to do with games.
Sorry. all those things. So I just continue my sentiment. I think I probably said a lot in the podcast this year. So I would say that, like, there isn't really some amazing standout games from this year. There aren't games that, you know, are going to rocket to the top of a list or that are going to be commonly loved. I'm guessing Wingspan is going to be that game that's liked by a majority of people. But I still think this year was great. There were so many good things. There were good games to play. There was things to look forward to. And there are games from this year that, even though they're not my favorites, I'm happy to go back and play them and teach them to people for various reasons.
Yeah.
And things like that. But it's also good just to go back. Like, yesterday I had us go play Castell.
Yep.
And I continued to know why I thought that was one of my favorite games of 2018.
Yeah.
I just really like that game. And it wasn't like, oh, well, now all these new games came out and I don't like it anymore.
Right.
I still really liked it. So I think there's a lot of value in doing that and finding days to do those various things and whatnot. But, yeah, I think my biggest disappointment from this year has been your lack of love for Marvel Champions, the card game.
Oh, yeah.
I really thought that was basically a home run. I know you don't like deck building, so I figured I could build the decks. But it's so simple to build a deck in that game.
Yeah.
And cooperative is fine, card games are fine, and you love Marvel.
The thing I love about Marvel that you disregard is the story.
100%, yeah. No, you've said that to me. So the attachment to the characters in the deck versus the attachment to the characters in the MCU over a series of 22 movies is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Right, no, so it makes sense. So I can't really tell because it's both you and Brian are both hesitant to play the game. And I don't know, it's because Larry and I have logged like 60 to 70 plays and it feels overwhelming.
I think that we're like tired of it by proxy.
Right. Yeah, so I wonder as it kind of unfolds a little bit more, it's not so gung-ho, maybe there'll be some more, but... Because we played it recently, and it was a pretty good game, although it's so funny in that game. Every time I teach a new player, they have this tiny tableau of, like, two or three cards, and then somebody has, like, 30 cards, and they're like, am I doing this wrong?
Exactly.
That's just how those characters play, so...
Yeah.
Cool! 2019, gaming year overall, pretty good. Personal year, not my favorite. But we move on to 2020, lots of good games that we can start talking about. I've already got a stack of games that I'm looking forward to learning and playing and teaching. And Brian and I are playing Legacy 5 games into 10, so we're halfway through it.
Nice.
And I will enjoy and play it. It's really good, and I'm really considering playing it.
Cool.
You like story and character?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's it for this episode, number 143. No one's ever really. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time.